You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. If I'm sounding a little froggy, I am. Please excuse mes amis, and happy Friday to each and every one of you. Again, my name is Maggie Dawn. I got a great co-host with me for this first hour. His name is Jim Santel. He is a former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin and host of the fine program Amicus, a legal brief that you can find across the Civic Media Talk Radio Network from 9 to 11 on Saturdays. Welcome back, Jim.
Maggie, delighted to be with you once again. You don't sound one bit froggy to me.
Okay, well, we'll keep rolling with that. I have a bit of breaking news for you, Jim, and all of our fine listeners. The Supreme Court, within the last couple of hours, declining to permit the Trump administration to continue to deport people under the Alien Enemies Act. This was an emergency appeal on the Supreme Court's shadow docket. This from CNN Politics. The Supreme Court on Friday blocked President Donald Trump from moving forward with deportations under the 1798 Alien Enemies Act for a specific group of immigrants in northern Texas, siding with the Venezuelans who feared they were poised for imminent removal under the sweeping wartime authority. The decision is a significant loss for Trump, who wants to use the law to speed deportations and avoid the kind of review normally required before removing people from the country. Yeah, that's called due process. CNN continues, but the decision is also temporary. And the underlying legal fight over the president's invocation of the Alien Enemies Act continues simultaneously in multiple federal courts across the country. You won't be surprised to hear, Jim, that Thomas and Alito publicly noted their dissent in the unsigned order. This decision was very strongly worded, I guess, would be a way to characterize this. The court noted that the Trump administration has represented that it is, quote, unable to provide for the return of an individual deported in error to a prison in El Salvador, referring to the case of Albrego Kilmar Garcia. The court continued then and said the detainee's interest, therefore, in this case are accordingly particularly waiting. Yeah, I would say
yes,
so.
Yes, yes.
And here was the other, some of the other notable language that I saw. The court called the Trump administration's handling of the removals as not passing muster. It did not, quote, pass muster. And the justices noted that there was only 24 hours notice provided to these particular potential deportees, which was, quote, devoid of information about how to exercise the due process rights to contest that removal. The court went on and said this: today's ruling effectively extends the temporary freeze. There's also additional language in there. It's pretty gosh darn clear for a Supreme Court emergency docket petition. Jim, your immediate reactions to this breaking news.
Absolutely. And again, I think we've got the Supreme Court again gradually moving to the right position here. We saw them, a couple of weeks ago saying we're not going to address the underlying issue about whether the Alien Enemies Act applies, but you have to establish due process for anybody. And that was a big step, right? Even though they didn't address the underlying predicate issue. And so now we're more than inching, but we're getting to that right spot where we're not only ensuring that due process is accomplished here, but in the meantime, can't do anything without that. It is also significant because, as you just noted, Maggie, we've got, again, near unanimity, not quite unanimity. It comes in the wake of was Judge Stephanie Haynes of just last week, Western Pennsylvania. She's a district court judge. She's the first one who goes in the opposite direction, and she says that the Alien Enemies Act can be used. The president can use it. She's out there, and she's an outlier. She's not the one who's in the mainstream here. And so it's also beginning to capsulize, if you will, this overall sort of jurisprudence in this area. Supreme Court sounds to me as if it's moving a whole lot more directly to saying, Donald, you need to do these fundamental things, and we're going to give you some leeway, but we're not going to let you just run roughshod over rights. And oh, by the way, the fact that they once again identify the Maryland man who has been sitting in El Salvador mistakenly for all these weeks and months, that is an outrage, of course, for all of us in America. That should be a matter of shame for the Department of Justice, Homeland Security. The fact that they identify that also speaks volumes to me.
A bunch of things there, Jim. I just wanted to point out for everyone, to date, again, every single judge that has considered whether or not the Trump administration can invoke the Alien Enemies Act has ruled that it cannot. The Alien Enemies Act applies when there is an invasion or you're at war. They found that neither applies. The judge in the one case where the judge concluded that the Trump administration may invoke the Alien Enemies Act to deport these particular Venezuelans, predicated that ruling on her crediting the administration's assertion that the immigrants were being, the immigrants, A, were part of this Tren de Agua gang, and that the gang itself and the immigrants coming to the United States illegally were being controlled in part or whole by the Venezuelan government. That's how she got to the Alien Enemies Act invocation. What's interesting there is she does not interrogate that factual representation by the government. What we have seen in the reporting over the last 2 weeks, Jim, is that intelligence agencies have issued a report directly contradicting that, saying they have no evidence, no reason to believe that immigrants from Venezuela are either a priori or without other specific evidence presumed to have any affiliation with Tren de Agua, and or that that gang or these immigrants are being directed, controlled, or otherwise cooperating in cahoots, in collaboration, pick your synonym here, with the Venezuelan government. In other words, the judge carefully crafted that ruling, and the factual basis that that entire ruling hinges upon is actual nonsense.
Right.
So I'll put it this way. There is unanimity amongst all federal courts, including the one that seemed to rule in the opposite, that actually he can't do this at all because the factual predicate in that case has been undermined by Trump's own intelligence agencies.
And that's
which I think is an important point here.
Absolutely. And that it is huge, Maggie, as both of us, your listeners, know this as well. There has always been, until recently, and again, I think Judge Haynes' order reflects this, not a complete deference factually, but government comes forward. You were in government, I was in government. There was a kind of a presumption that if you stood forward and said, you know what, I'm going to make a proffer to you, Judge, that this is what the world is all about. These are the facts out there. There wasn't just a complete buy-in from the judges, but there was a presumption that we're representing accurately what's going on. And so she does, in fact, parse her language to say, okay, if you, in fact, are representing to me that this is the case, I'll rely on that. But she doesn't, as you just accurately and precisely said, she doesn't buy into the underlying factual presentation, except insofar as the attorneys are saying this to her. And now we've got the broader information, of course, that it's not true. It's not true. And that's what the other judges are also just tearing their hair out about, right? Whether it's Boasberg in Washington, D.C. or Zinnix in Maryland, they're saying, tell me the truth. Tell me what's going on here. And we've got a Department of Justice, assistant U.S. attorneys, people from Maine Justice appearing in front of them, not telling them the truth, not responding to them. And that is the breakdown of the system.
So, Jim, this gets me to this next juiciest question. Folks, if you're just joining us, that's Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to join Jim and I in this great discussion this fine Friday afternoon, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. One of the core problems here, Jim, in my opinion, is that lawyers are repeatedly lying to the court.
Yes, yes. Right.
And I am really curious. I mean, during COVID, I forgot to send my CLE paperwork in and my license got administratively suspended for 2 weeks and I had to hire a lawyer. I mean, it was a huge kerfuffle. I probably spent northwards of like $8,000 because I was working for the county at that time, I wanted to be sure that the county executive understood that I was taking this seriously, that I realized I had made a mistake and not complete. I mean, bad stuff. But they yanked my license for 2 weeks because I didn't send in the right paperwork on time during a once-in-a-generation global pandemic.
Right. An administrative matter, right? Exactly.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. What in the hell? Like, where are these state bars?
Right.
Are people not filing ethics complaints? And if so, why not? Because these are, especially in the case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, and the representations made about when the airplanes were leaving.
Right,
I mean, this is lawyers lying to federal court judges.
It is. It is. And again, that is not only, we talk about being an officer of the court. That's number one, right? We take an oath to the state constitution, the federal constitution. We also stand up. We are also admitted to the bars. And that means that when a judge asks you a question, you, me, any lawyer, doesn't have to be in government, outside of government. The answer has got to be, Your Honor, these are the facts, and this is how I know. If I don't know, the response is, I won't say
right.
so. I won't make things up. And then you quickly, as you and I have always done, said, Your Honor, I will get that information to you as quickly as I can.
Let me run out of court and go get and file immediately.
Right.
And here's the thing, like, even if government agents or high-level people in the Trump administration are willing to lie about it, lawyers, as officers of the court, have certain diligence responsibilities before they can permit their client to say in a sworn document or in court after swearing an oath that these things are true. It's why, let's be clear here, a lot of criminal defense lawyers don't put their clients on the stand because you cannot, as a lawyer, suborn perjury, whether in live testimony in court or in a sworn document. So all of this is strains the outer limits of what we should be able to expect, especially from lawyers working in government. There's an old Supreme Court case where I forget who's writing here. It may even be Learned Hand or someone of similar repute, where the justice says the government lawyer's job is not to win necessarily, but to seek justice in the courts.
Right.
And justice, of course, is predicated upon a commitment to both tell and seek the truth.
Exactly.
Folks, we got Jim Santel with me. I'm Maggie Dawn. It's a Friday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. Got to share a little bit of fact. House of Representatives says no to the big, beautiful bill. We'll discuss that and the Supreme Court's incredible oral arguments yesterday that could upset constitutional rights in this country as we know them. This fine discussion continues on the other side. Join us, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you are doing just fine this afternoon. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, here at Civic Media, all summer long, it's going to be Free Ticket Friday, where we will be giving away a 4-pack of Brewers tickets for our lovely club-level seats. I have sat there before. They're gorgeous tickets. Can see the whole ballpark beautifully. To enter to win, you're going to need to download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps from. It is free. And then you're going to want to keep listening. This hour and next hour, I will be dropping the word to win. You're going to want to text that word in via the app. If you text it in on your phone the old-fashioned way, that doesn't count for getting yourself entered to win. When you text in via the app, you will get an acknowledgement text, and our winners will be notified on Monday. So keep it locked throughout the Maggie Dawn Show and all day long here on Civic Media for the Free Ticket Friday word to win. Here's some of the breaking news. Obviously, the GOP tax bill and budget reconciliation got voted down. Shockingly, 5 Republicans, I'm going to call them hardcore right Republicans, voted against the bill, including Josh Brechin, I don't know how to say the guy's last name, a Republican from Oklahoma, Chip Roy, Texas, Ralph Norman of South Carolina, Andrew Klein of Georgia, and Lloyd Smucker, no, not that Smucker, though he is from Pennsylvania, all voting against it because there's not enough cuts. Now, here's what, everybody, that's pretty rich. Considering the fact, and this is like typical New York Times these days, one of their headlines today reading, the GOP tax bill may hurt the lowest earners and help the richest. Let me help you out, New York Times editorial board. It is guaranteed to do just that. And ladies and gentlemen, if you were listening all week to this fine program, what you know is that I broke all of this down for you on Wednesday in detail. I broke it down before the Times or the Washington Post or the LA Times or the Chicago Trib went through all of this detail. They're finally getting there today. I did it on Wednesday. You always get the best economic analysis here first. And in fact, some of what that New York Times article covers is from the Penn-Wharton budget model. What did I talk about on Wednesday? The Penn-Wharton budget model.
And Maggie, you know, Jim, also got a much better headline, right? You go right to the point and explain this is not a matter for vacillating and this language is sort of indicates, well, this might have this simple. No, you are very clear and the facts support that, right? And the New York Times has had this problem all along and
for a long time. And it's getting worse, frankly. They quote the same statistics that I was quoting on Wednesday. Folks that make less than $51,000 a year will see their after-tax income fall.
There you go.
Fall because so many of the deductions and other things that actually benefit the middle class are on the chopping block. In addition, folks reporting less than $17,000 in income will see an even higher reduction in their after-tax income. Wow. But hey, if you're making more than 4.3 mil, Jim, I know that's me and you. Yeah.
Yes.
But no.
Yes.
If you make more than $4.3 million, you're going to see your after-tax income grow by nearly $400,000 because you really need that if you're pocketing 4.3 mil. I just, none of this is defensible at any level. And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, may I also remind everybody that Donald Trump has passed a whopping 5 pieces of legislation since getting sworn in, the lowest number of bills enacted in any president's first clip of time in over 70 years. He's literally not getting it done for the American people, Jim.
And in fairness, Maggie, we do know that he's trying to legislate by executive orders. We've got lots of those going on.
By fiat, yes.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so we no longer care about the legislature. And, of course, when he does, what does he say about this wonderful exposition that you've been doing? He says Republicans must unite behind the one big, beautiful bill. We don't need grandstanders. Republican Party, stop talking and get it done. Well, if that's your version of legislative pursuits, Mr. President, you're going to be experiencing a lot of this down the road. It is stunning also, as you said at the top of today's discussion of this, that the reason why the Republicans are falling apart now is because it didn't go far enough, right?
Right. The things that they're worried about is that there aren't enough cuts.
Yes.
There isn't enough harm to the middle class to benefit the wealthiest among us, to give them more tax welfare that they don't need in the first place. It's so ridiculous. It is reverse Robin Hood, rob from the poor to give to the rich. Trump also later today, after that tweet on Truth Social or whatever we call them, said, this bill is great. The golden age of America will soon be upon us. To be clear, what Donald Trump is talking about is that he will make life suck more for all middle-class Americans and all working poor, while making life all the more enriched, easy, and lazy for the very ultra-wealthy and mega-corporations and the very, very, very few of us that own stock in mega-corporations. The golden age of America will soon be upon it. Why doesn't he just call it out? It's the Gilded Age, Jim. Mm-hmm. Back when it's the only point in time in our country's history where we've seen wealth inequality that's anywhere in the ballpark, though our wealth and income inequality is worse now than it was back then. Absolutely disgusting.
And that's the mission in all of these areas. This is the latest illustration of it. Let us hope, with your advocacy and others out there, people have got to remember this event right here, right now, right? Yeah. This is the attempt. Remember this in November of 2026 when you're figuring out who your representative is going to be in that very Congress.
Absolutely. Join this fine conversation. We got a couple of callers on the line. We got a fine guest co-host in the chair with me. His name's Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. My name's Maggie Dawn, your host. Through all 2 hours this afternoon, we're going to take your calls and texts. We're going to talk about that Supreme Court argument that happened yesterday. I don't know, Jim, maybe a toss-up, that one. Mm-hmm. Keep it locked, everybody. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and join us, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. A run to keep from hiding, except it's Friday, and I'm here with all of you. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a fine guest co-host with me. His name's Jim Santel. He hosts the wonkiest of the wonky.
It is.
Radio shows, which I adore, Jim. You are with me when I'm doing my Saturday morning cleanings. You can find Jim's fine program, Amicus, a Legal Brief, from 9 to 11 a.m. every Saturday morning. Jim, I wanted to talk with you about the arguments before the Supreme Court yesterday. To reset the stage, I did touch on it yesterday. We played some of the sound because, of course, I sat there riveted, glued to my chair.
All 2.5 hours, Maggie. You were there for 2.5 hours, right?
Taking notes and pelting my poor producers with texts of the sound that I wanted from the argument. So just to set the stage for everyone, again, Donald Trump has had this, what I'm going to call, immigration unconstitutional plan.
That fixation, has right?
Yeah. Yes, multiple elements. Almost all of them have been found by virtually all courts to be unconstitutional. The most notable of which was the executive order he signed on the day he was sworn in, doing away with birthright citizenship. Birthright citizenship means if you are born on American soil, even if your mother or father were here illegally, you are considered an American citizen. Again, every single court that has heard this, every single federal district court that has heard that question has concluded that his executive order is unconstitutional. The Trump administration has been appealing that. In a number of those cases, I believe at least three various federal district courts, when they heard that original question, the plaintiffs in those cases asked for immediate injunctive relief, which means while we argue the merits of this case in a much longer form, will you, this court, please tell the Trump administration they can't enforce that executive order? And the courts, in response, said, yes, we will issue that injunction. And a number of district courts went so far as to issue the injunction on a nationwide basis. Instead of appealing on the merits and asking the Supreme Court, there are expedited ways to put merits issues before the Supreme Court of the United States on something as fundamental as the question of who is a citizen. Instead of asking the court to do that, the Trump administration asked the court to consider this seemingly technical question about whether or not district courts can indeed issue nationwide injunctions. Now, it gets a little weird here, Jim, because that is it is basically the issue that was being argued before the court. But as you know, Jim, as a fellow lawyer, when a party goes before a judge and says, will you issue a temporary injunction, you end up arguing about the underlying merits of the case. And it's only if you are likely to prevail on the merits of the case that a court will issue an injunction. Because if you were going to lose anyways, why would they give you this temporary relief? It mucks up the machinery. But again here, the merits end up being argued a bit, as do the practical implications of the idea that, well, if a court can't enter those kinds of injunctions. And what I found most fascinating in the arguments was that the government's lawyer, Solicitor General Sauer, repeatedly basically said, Well, we don't think we'll follow court orders, but not if we don't think they apply to a particular individual. So even if a court has entered an order in a particular district, for example, the Eastern District of Wisconsin, if we don't think for whatever factual reasons it doesn't apply to a particular person, we won't follow it as to that person, and we won't need to follow it outside that district anyways. Oh, and by the way, of course, we would oppose the certification of a nationwide class of plaintiffs on various grounds. At least you wouldn't concede that they wouldn't challenge that. So the practicalities of this boil down to this. If you're a person or the parent of someone who might be born, and don't even get me into the practicalities of how someone would go about doing that if they're pregnant, anyways, but setting aside that, it seemed that the government was arguing, and indeed he conceded when asked another hypothetical about gun rights by Justice Kagan, conceded, yeah, basically each person would need to bring a case as to themselves or their soon-to-be-born child to ensure their citizenship, which to me renders the Constitution a nullity, meaning it's meaningless. Am I missing something here, Jim?
Not at all. Not at all. So John Sauer, again, for what it's worth, the president's former lawyer. This is the same guy who about a year ago, Maggie, you and
former
I know this, you're the right
lawyer,
exactly,
yeah.
And argued, apparently successfully, that presidents should have immunities, putting all that to one side. He comes forward and he says, yeah, you need to run into all your federal district courts around the country if you've got a situation. And of course, I think probably all the justices, even those who are going to go in the opposite direction, probably wondering. Appropriately, Ketanji Brown Jackson, she calls that a catch me if you can system. Don't you
yes.
love that phrase? So in other words, you've got to go into the Eastern District of Wisconsin, District of Minnesota, Northern District of Texas, Southern District of California on every single one of
There's
these cases.
There's 92 district courts
exactly.
in the United States.
And presumably under Sauer's invocation of all this, maybe even multiple cases in each of those districts,
correct.
Right? To vindicate your own personal right. That is not our system of federalism. And again, it was good to hear a bit some of the justices pushing back on that and saying, I know, how do we get this? Gorsuch, among others, said, all
yes.
right, how do we get this more quickly to us so we can avoid that disaster of having all of these cases percolating up, a word again used a lot
yes.
yesterday, right? Percolate. It's all going to percolate up all over the place, right?
Got to percolate the case.
Nothing good ever happens when things are percolating up from courts, right? And so you even got Gorsuch saying, how do we get this more immediately to us? He doesn't have an answer, of course, because he's just across the board. He's got a bright line test. These things are bad, can never do them. And thankfully, once again, you've got someone like Amy Coney Barrett, and yes, at the risk of sounding, right? She's saying,
who knew?
Right, exactly. And it appears that she might have the answer to this, along with the Attorney General of New Jersey. There's got to be balance, right? It may not
yes.
be that every case is subject to a national injunction here, but to your excellent point, the big stuff, right? How you interpret that first bit of language in the 14th Amendment, that should be universal, right? And can we
well,
describe,
here's,
right?
Here's the thing, like the arguments kept coming back to, well, what is our rule of thumb for when nationwide
yes.
injunctions are permissible? And they went through some different buckets and impractical and a little bit. But basically it came down to like, it's a really big deal.
Right.
And I thought that that's an okay rubric. They've used yes. similarly vague definitions of, you know, the what do they call it when they got rid of Chevron and substituted it like the
absolutely
the,
right
the big question
right.
doctrine,
the major questions
like,
doctrine. It's
yes,
big and it's new, and that's what John Roberts describes as the biggest new. You can't do it. Major questions doctrine. They've been that broad before. This can't be that difficult, right, Maggie?
No.
Come up with that rule. Admittedly, it's going to get different applications around the country, but describe it. It can be done. I'm looking to Amy Coney Barrett, and yes, indeed, the other women on the Supreme Court to
yes,
come up with the
clearly,
right answer here.
Right. Clearly, Justices Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sotomayor, I think Amy Coney Barrett
yes.
is not going to take the bait. Justice Thomas, of course, said like three things. He's like, oh, when did these nationwide injunctions
right.
become a big deal? 1906, we seem to do okay without them before.
History,
and like, that's
the, right?
Which doesn't is not actually accurate. Many scholars trace back these kinds of actions by courts over a couple of hundred years. It was all very painful to watch. I was encouraged by Gorsuch's questions. Mm-hmm. I was even at times encouraged by some of the questions from Brett Kavanaugh.
Yes.
Which it's interesting, again, to see this is the kind of case, and maybe it's only this kind of case, where you could get a Kavanaugh, maybe a Roberts, and Amy Coney Barrett to side with the other three liberal justices to say, you can't actually be operating in this level of unconstitutionalism and then say, everybody just hold your horses. We'll continue to violate people's constitutional rights while this percolates up through the courts.
Right.
Let's take a couple of calls because I think this is fascinating. And of course, that happened yesterday, and then we had the Supreme Court today blocking Donald Trump's continued use of the Alien Enemies Act to deport these Venezuelans. So I thought that was the timing here, the 1-2 step was kind of interesting.
And you almost wonder, again, they live in the real world. They're there from day to day. You almost wonder, Maggie, if they're getting a bit weary of this, right? Maybe they want to get back to interpreting the Clean Air Act and the Civil Rights Act and the things that they should do.
Right, some really boring administrative law
the APA,
type questions.
Right?
Now that they've blown up the Chevron doctrine.
Right.
Let's wade into some other areas of expertise that they don't have. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Mark from Prairie du Sac, say hello to Jim. What do you got for us?
Hey, Jim. Yeah, it just troubles me deeply that at one hand, they want to say that all these people that are here illegally are under the jurisdiction of the United States, so they're all criminals, but then they want to avoid due process, which is required, not even when you get Fourth and Fifth Amendments. It is required, but under the Constitution itself, all crimes require a trial by jury. I mean, it is just can't be clearer than that. I mean, it just troubles me greatly that they're avoiding the whole thing, and then we have the Kristi Noem saying, well, they're getting due process. Well, due process is supposed to actually mean something. So that's supposed to have a concrete meaning, not some kind of ethereal thing that they've decided that, their due process is slap in the handcuffs, somebody throw them, toss them in an airplane and ship them off to El Salvador.
And your point, Mark, it's inconsistency, right, Mark? That's the point you're making. It's due process when it's convenient, but many times, not so much.
None
we don't have to
all.
Do that, right?
Many times, none at all. Listen, right? Nobody from Mensa or, the Article III courts is calling Kristi Noem to help them understand these issues. Jacob, do we have time for the Noem cut where she says due process doesn't require a hearing? No, we do not. We'll take it on the flip side. Folks, if you want to join this discussion, 855-752-4842. I've got a fine guest co-host with me. His name is Jim Santel. Jim, I want to queue up and talk a little bit about Justice Souter.
Yes.
Because he passed last Thursday. Mm-hmm. And for those that aren't legal nerds, this was quite a moment. And I was hoping when we come back, if you could share some of your thoughts about who Justice Souter is. And maybe right now, we've got a little bit of time.
Sure.
Cue up why Justice Souter is such a lightning rod.
Right. He is because he ignited, if you will, the phrase, no more suitors. That's the conservative mantra that says, let's be certain that when we get somebody in the Supreme Court, they'll do exactly what we want. David Souter was not that person. That's the other great story of his life and the time on the bench.
We will talk briefly about Justice Souter when we return. Then I'm going to bring on one of my favorite Friday guests, Terry Barr, for a little bit of what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. All coming up next right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Friday, everybody. We made it. Thank goodness. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got Jim Santel closing out the hour with me. Don't forget you can find him Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Wanted to give a little love to one of our callers, Joe from Madison. Say hi to Jim. What you got for us this afternoon?
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Hey, guys. Great show as always. I'm asking a question that's a little bit tangential, but I think it's part of this whole discussion, and it has to do with immigration and ICE raids. I'm thinking about the example that happened this week with the Justice Dugan out of Milwaukee, who, as I understand it, faces the felony charge of obstruction for they claim that she was showing an immigrant in her courtroom how to leave, and this constitutes obstruction and what she was charged with, that felony. My question is this: the entertainer Kid Rock, who's a good pal of Donald Trump and has been photographed in his office and all, had there were ICE raids that were happening in Nashville where he has some restaurants, and apparently one of the sources said that his staff was told anyone without legal status is asked to go home. And the reason being that they didn't want ICE raids in their restaurants. My question for you is that obstruction? You know that there's going to be ICE raids, so you close your restaurant and tell your undocumented people to go home because, I mean, you don't want to lose them as employees, or you don't want this uproar happening or whatever. Isn't that obstruction?
It depends on how far out the circle gets drawn, doesn't right. it, Joe? What I will say very clearly is that Kid Rock's restaurant in Nashville is not protected by the 10th Amendment. Lots of discussion to come on that. I am watching that case very closely. Please keep it locked right here, Joe. We will continue to bring you updates on Judge Dugan's case. In fact, we will have some of those updates right after the top of the hour. Jim, wanted to give you a shot. Please tell people why Justice Souter is such an important role model for attorneys, judges, and regular everyday people alike.
Here's a guy who is, again, nominated by George H.W. Bush. He's assumed to be a conservative justice, anticipating he's going to take the bench. We're going to overrule Roe versus Wade. And what does he do when he's on the bench? Maggie, you and I know this. Everybody else does, too. He is his own person. And by that, he means he applies the law to the facts. And he says, you know what? I'm not going to follow the agenda of any particular party. Ends up doing a number of things that, again, earn him this No More Souters title from the conservatives. In the Casey case, he sides with those who, including Sandra Day O'Connor, who support the right to an abortion, surprising people, and he articulates that in a way. He talks about stare decisis. This is the way the world has been. Let's not upset it. Bush versus Gore. He is horrified that the panel takes the case on, stops the voting in Florida because of the justice behind it. He is a man who stands, again, for the independence of the judiciary and somebody who's bringing thoughtfulness to the work that he does. Fled Washington, D.C. at the young age of 69 to get out of there, went back to New Hampshire. He has this great commitment to civics and the importance of understanding how government works. He is an icon in American history, often overlooked.
Thanks so much. That's U.S. Attorney, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. We're now going to turn to one of my favorite guests every week, Terry Barr, for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Welcome, Terry. What you got for us this afternoon?
Hello, Maggie. This will give you hope again. I recently talked with a gentleman who has a new book out, and the book is called Wisconsin Heroes, 100 People Who Changed the State, the World, and Me. I'm talking about author Dean Robbins. I had so much fun discussing this book with him. Amazing stories he found of all types of heroes in action, and almost all of them are either from Wisconsin or have a great story tied to Wisconsin that will certainly make you smile. So when I talked to him, I did ask him, you know, why did you write this book? What does this mean to you? He told me about this, including one of his favorite heroes. Let's take a listen.
Fascinated with him. I had my sister tie up my wrists and my ankles with bandanas so that I could wriggle out of them the way Houdini had wriggled out of straitjackets.
You're brave.
Well, you know, it wasn't that hard. Probably harder for Houdini. It went on and on and on. I just fell in love with one heroic figure after another. artists and activists and athletes and scientists. And I always had a strong interest in getting other people emotionally invested in them too. I just want my heroes to be your heroes. And to me, the best way to do that is through storytelling.
I'm so curious about your favorite. Do you have one, or can you even choose one, Dean?
I'm a huge music fan. I love Elvis Presley. And there's a little known Elvis story. It's really one of my favorites. This is 1977. He was booked to play at the Coliseum in Madison 2 months before his death. And he was just bottoming out with despair and depression. He was still wearing his sparkly blue jumpsuit from a concert that night in Des Moines when he landed at the airport late at night in Madison. He was in a limousine going to his hotel for the concert the next day, and he was stopped at an intersection, and a young gas station attendant was being attacked by a gang of bullies. Maybe for the last time ever, something stirred in Elvis. And he said, "I can't let this happen." And he flung open the car door over his bodyguard's strenuous objections, and he strode off toward the attackers, throwing karate kicks and saying, "I'll take you on." He's wearing this sparkly blue jumpsuit, throwing karate kicks. I mean, it was a spectacle. And it was obviously Elvis Presley. Well, they ran. So Elvis had saved the day, the last miracle of his life.
Maggie, we need more Elvis these days.
We all need a little Elvis in a sparkly blue jumpsuit coming in to save the day. I'll take my heroes in whatever
to save America,
form they
right?
come. That's
yes.
right. Folks, that's Terry Barr, my good friend and colleague in broadcasting here at Civic Media. You can find her every Friday with you and me for a little bit of what's good, local, and overlooked. Thanks to Terry. Thanks to James. Thanks to all of you. I'll be back at the top of the hour with breaking news of the day. Keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.